Welcome to episode 13 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirschner. Chris, how are you?
Still trying to recover after yesterday's Game 7 loss. It was tough. Tough way to end the season.
I truly feel bad for all of you Knicks fans.
No, you don't.
My heart aches for you guys. My heart was breaking as I saw you guys go down by 300 points at one point in that game. The pain just took over, and just felt bad for you guys. Totally, like, horrible for you guys.
It just sucks because, like, you know, the season was so fun, and then literally everybody gets hurt. Like, even the guys who were playing, you know, Dante gets hit in the back yesterday. I mean, he obviously still had a good game. Hartenstein, you know, seems banged up. OG, like, they played him for a couple minutes. He couldn't move. And then Brunson breaks his hand. Mitchell Robinson gets hurt. He's not even, you know, involved in the series. It's just it sucks that it ended this way, but it was still a really, really fun season. I mean, I'm 31 years old. There haven't been many fun seasons of the Knicks to watch. I mean, you know, the past couple of years with Brunson in the fold has been, you know, exciting, and it's definitely given hope that, you know, the future is bright. But, you know, I go back to some of the Carmelo seasons, like even when they had Carmelo, the team wasn't going anywhere. Like, you knew, like, they didn't have any chance of winning. But, like, with this core, like, they have really good pieces that they can build around, and the contract situations are not discouraging, like your Bulls, because, you know, they have Zach LaVine. Who the hell is training for Zach LaVine? So, like, they don't have a guy like that on the roster where you look at it and it's like, damn, like, this is gonna, like, bog them down. You know, I'm looking at, like, the Phoenix Suns. I saw, like, the other day their GM, James Jones, said, like, they're not trading Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, or Devin Booker. And, you know, just from my background covering the NBA, it's like that team's going nowhere. I don't care who's coming in to coach. They hired Mike Budenholzer. But when you look at the depth they have zero depth behind those guys. It takes more than three guys to win in the NBA these days. Like, the super team era, in my opinion, is done. You need a lot of depth to win, and the Suns don't have it. And that gives me hope that the Knicks can do something in the near future, just with the good depth and the contracts that they have on the books. So, you know, I'm encouraged about the future, and I haven't really had the opportunity to say that many times in my life when it comes to the Knicks.
Well, that's good. I noticed a little shot at the Bulls, but I'm only a Bulls fan really at this point out of, like, sheer loyalty to myself, my younger self. They're a disaster. So anytime someone mentions the Bulls to me, I'm like, yeah, I agree with you. They're terrible. They're a joke. Like, the biggest news for them is, like, hiring, like, experienced assistants. Like, that's the news that we get. I mean, the Bulls are terrible. I don't know if I'm, like, old school or whatever it is. I don't really want to, like, jump ship. You know what I mean? Like, I do like being attached to a team because it gives me a reason to like watch in a lot of ways. Especially for the NBA, because I generally think the NBA product is, like, not very good. I think there are good teams, but generally, like, I'm not the biggest fan of the NBA as a league anymore. So, like, I feel like I have to be attached to a team to, like, really be engaged, but my team is terrible. So I'm, like, still at square one. I do find it interesting where the Knicks are at, just because I feel like I've seen this before with other teams. You know, like, there's the hope, but then actually you can look at the Bulls, really, the Derrick Rose Bulls. I was convinced, like, I know that they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals, but in 2012, I thought that they were going to win the championship. And like, I know the Heat were there, but this was after the Heat lost to the Mavericks, and the Bulls were just as good as that Heat team, at least like throughout the regular season. And then Derrick Rose gets hurt, and like the franchise has never been the same. Like, they're a disaster. You know, everything, they put all their eggs in one basket. I know the Knicks aren't doing that per se. But I was also going to say that the injury thing is interesting, because as a 49ers fan, I know exactly what that feels like. Like, no jokes aside. I mean, when they played the Eagles in Philly a couple years ago, and Brock Purdy blows his elbow out on this fluke injury, you're basically watching your team's funeral for that year. You know, there's like nothing worse than injuries being so impactful on a game or a series where you already know the outcome before the game's over. You know, like with Purdy, it happened in the first quarter. There's like 45 minutes left of just watching your team lose a game. You can't do anything about it. And if I don't know if it felt the same way for like Knicks fans watching game 7 yesterday, but like after a while, you're just like, they cannot physically keep up with this other healthy team. Like, there's just, you know, I would have really enjoyed like throwing it in Knicks fans' faces, but like, what can you honestly say? They were hurt. You know, that's why they lost the series, to be quite honest. You know, I'm not blind. So, I mean, it's like difficult to, as a fan, when injuries play such a significant part in the outcome of a series, it's incredibly frustrating, because there's always a what if, then you're playing out scenarios, and it's like, it's annoying, it's frustrating, because you know what the reason is, and then other people will say it's an excuse, when really it's not an excuse. I mean, that whole team was hurt, you know what I mean? Like, and then the Pacers were healthy, and then you see like corny Halliburton like talking shit to everybody, and it's like, dude, you're playing like 2.5 healthy players, like, relax. You know, you wore the Reggie Miller hoodie after the game, not before the game. Like, I don't know, all that's corny to me. That's corny.
Yeah,
and I don't even like the Knicks, obviously, but like, you know, you look at Halliburton, you're just like, come on, man.
I certainly agree. I mean, if you're gonna do that, like, you know, have the guts to do it when you're walking up the ramp to get into MSG. And then if you win, like, that gives you a ton of like, oh shit. Like, he talked his shit and then he backed it up, but then you're doing right. It after the game. And it's like, all right, whatever. Yeah. I mean, like, it's cool. Like, I'm sure like Pacers fans obviously ate that up, because it's, you know, it's Reggie Miller. And obviously with Reggie's history with the Knicks, I'm sure they love that. But like, if you're not a fan of the Pacers, and even if you're not a fan of the Knicks, it's like, all right, whatever. But yeah, you know, I think the Knicks win that series pretty easily if, you know, they're relatively healthy, and like you said, they're not playing with 2.5 guys on the court who are at full strength. But it is what it is. You know, I find your tweet interesting after the game, how you brought it to the Yankees. You know, everybody wanted to complain last year about the injuries, and you know, it's not an excuse. It's, you know, for the Knicks, it is. It's really the reason why they lost.
Right. I mean,
and the Yankees last year, it's like the Yankees weren't good last year because they had a ton of injuries and guys didn't perform to the level of expectations that, you know, fans and themselves had for the organization. So yeah, I mean, it's, injuries suck, and injuries are a big part of why teams win or lose.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and this can go, part of the reason why we're like starting off with the Knicks is because we wanted to do something a little different and pose the question, is New York a Knicks town or a Yankees town? And the thing with the injuries is like really telling to me. Like, I'll answer the question first. I think it's very clearly a Yankees town. And the thing with the injuries is one of many examples for me that demonstrates that it is. And it all comes back to like standards and expectations. You know, the Yankees could never get going last year because of injuries. They are a better team in 2024 roster wise. you know, part of the issue last year, and I'll acknowledge it, is how the roster was built. There just wasn't enough depth. There were decisions made that probably shouldn't have been made, blah, blah, blah. But they were good enough on paper to make the playoffs. And if they were healthy, they at the very least would have been fighting for a wild card spot. But, you know, nobody wants to talk about that when it comes to the Yankees. That season was torpedoed by injuries, ultimately. I mean, even from spring training on, they dealt with injuries for a full season. The Knicks dealt with injuries for the majority of the season, I guess since Randall got hurt, and then from that point, it just got worse health-wise. But Knicks fans were so, I don't want to say desperate, because I don't want people to take this in like in a derogatory way, because I honestly am not trying to like start anything with anybody. But there's such a like desperation to win a title because it hasn't happened in so long, and there's like literal generations of Knicks fans that haven't seen it yet, that I just feel like the standards and expectations are lowered because of that desperation. And again, when I say desperation, I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but that's how it comes across as a non-Knicks fan who lives in New York. It just feels like if you have a certain level of standard and expectation for a team, that team is like the primary focus of the city, just because there's a tradition, you've seen it, you've created this standard of like championships, and you're always measured against that. The Knicks don't have that. I mean, there's really no other team in the city that does, outside maybe the football Giants, but they haven't won in a while either. And they're a mess as well. So I just feel like people just kind of put them to the side. But when, in my opinion, when the standard is championship or bust and people actually mean it, you know, like Jalen Brunson said it yesterday, but I don't really, that might be his feeling on it. But that's not the organization's mantra. I mean, that's not true with James Dolan. I mean, the owner doesn't operate that way. But like when it comes to the Yankees, that is absolutely how the organization and how fans and the players look at it. And that's real. To me, that just shows your grip on the city. And desperation and like a really like strong desire to see one doesn't necessarily mean like you run the city. You're not really running anything because you haven't won anything yet. Like you're giving standing ovations to guys. You're basically giving them like a participation trophy for playing extremely hard at the end of a series, knowing that they're all hurt and they're not winning and they're not moving on. You know, like the ovation to me yesterday was also interesting. I know it was a show of appreciation and respect, and deservedly so. Like, again, not trying to criticize. They earned those applauses. But nobody in Yankee Stadium is giving the Yankees a standing ovation for trying hard and competing if they know that they're going to lose a series to the Astros. They're getting booed. I was there for the 2022 ALCS at Yankee Stadium, and I won't say who the coach was, but coaches and fans were going back and forth in one of the games because the Yankees were getting ready to lose. Like, they were getting heckled left and right, and some coaches had enough. That wasn't happening at MSG yesterday. So I don't know. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a Yankees town. I think it's easy for the Knicks to capture a wide audience just because of the fact that they don't have to compete with any other team. There's few Nets fans out there. I mean, I'm sorry for the Nets fans who are listening to this, but that's just the reality of the situation. When the Knicks and Nets play each other, it's basically MSG in Brooklyn. Just with the level of noise that the Knicks get, it's just no comparison. So they don't really have a fair equal. Whereas like the Mets, yeah, you know, obviously they haven't won much, and you know, they have been a disaster at numerous times throughout the past several decades. But there are a lot of Mets fans, and there are a lot of passionate Mets fans. And, you know, the Yankees obviously have a huge fan base too, and it's obviously bigger than the Mets, but like, that's a real team that the Yankees have to compete with when it comes to audience, whereas the Knicks don't have it. And I think a lot of the times people get caught up in like how fans act outside of MSG with like the side talk videos and all that. Like that's cool and all, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a Knicks town. And I think your point about winning plays a huge role in this. You know, for most of my life, the Knicks have been trash. Like there hasn't been much to celebrate. You know, they went to the finals in 98. I was 6 years old. And really since then, they've been to the playoffs, obviously, a couple times, but never really had a chance to win it all. Whereas with the Yankees, it's you don't win a World Series title and, you know, the city's going to burn down. And the thing with the Yankees, too, like I know it's probably not the best measure to, you know, talk about this conversation, but you know, sports talk radio in New York City, you're hearing about the Yankees year round. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, January or February or, you know, March, you know, some people may not be into spring training, but you're hearing about the Yankees year round. Whereas the Knicks, it's not, that's not the case. So again, it's not like a, I don't know if it's a great measure when we're talking, is this a Yankees or Knicks town, but you know, I do think like that plays a small part in it, but also just the level of standards that the organizations have is a big thing. I also think a big part of this is the affordability factor.
Yes,
you can't agreed. if you're if you're a fan of both the Knicks and the Yankees, going to MSG is basically impossible unless you have like a lot of money. You know, I was looking at games and, you know, for the playoffs. And one of the reasons why I went to Philly for game six in the first round is because, like, I don't want to, like, I'm a fan, but, like, I don't want to spend, like, $600 for a ticket. I mean, it's just crazy. Like, the regular fan can't afford that. Whereas with the Yankees, like, sure, it's expensive. Like, if you're coming out of town and you have to park, and parking is freaking $50 outside the stadium. And then if you're a family of four, you know, you got to pay for the concessions. You know, little Johnny wants a hat, and that's $47. But, like, if you're in the city, it's much more affordable to get to a Yankee game than it is a Knicks game. Like, a regular, you know, I'm sure – you know, they're playing the Mariners today. I'm sure you can get into the stadium for under $20. And then what right. you spend after that is, you know, is on you. You're not getting into MSG for $20 ever. They can play the no. Hornets. You're not getting in for $20. They no. whoever they play. So I do feel like affordability is a big part of this too. Like, you know, New York City is not just Manhattan. There are other, and I'm talking like, you know, Midtown Manhattan or, you know, downtown Wall Street, whatever. Like there's a lot of different neighborhoods with varying levels of income. Like if you go to Washington Heights right now, I assume that if you go into any bodega, they're going to have Yankee stuff, way more right. Yankee stuff than Knicks stuff. You go in the Bronx, obviously, you know, that's a Knicks borough, but even like Staten Island, like I'm sure like there's a lot more places in the city outside of Manhattan and like the area, like I live in Hell's Kitchen. But if you go outside of, you know, this area, I'm sure like the amount of Yankee stuff you'd see in like your local bodega, your barbershop, it's more Yankee stuff, in my opinion, that you'd probably see over Knicks gear. And I feel like affordability is a big reason for that, because it's just impossible to get to MSG.
Right. And I mean, there's two other things that kind of factor into it, and you touch on it a little bit, is like the Yankees are a global brand. Like it's very hard to beat a global brand, you know, like even if you're looking at fashion collaborations, I know Kith does stuff with the Knicks and that's been successful, but you look at so many different streetwear brands, you look at like high fashion brands, they're turning to the Yankees. Like that logo is licensed in so many places that transcend sports. You know, there's something to that. You know, they're not running to the Knicks to get like the license of that logo that they have. You know what I mean? So it just has like a different presence that transcends sports, but also, and I think more importantly, when we really look at it, I think the difference in ownership like has a big thing to do with this as well. Like you mentioned that the Knicks are in really good financial position to make decisions to make their roster stronger. And that's true. But does anybody really know what James Dolan is thinking? You know what I mean? Like, he still feels, I know he's been in the background for the Knicks and for the Rangers, and he's let the basketball and hockey people do their thing. Maybe that's how it's going to be moving forward. But he also has a history of doing a lot of ridiculous stuff that impacts the team or impacts the fan base. I mean, like the thing with Spike not being able to use the elevator, or like Charles Oakley being banned, and, you know, all the requirements that go into sitting in Celebrity Row, and the price ranges that you were talking about with the tickets. And I think this is also good perspective for Yankees fans. I don't ever have to like question where Hal's intent is. And I don't have to question, is Hal going to do something out of the blue? Is he irrational? Is he going to have some off the cuff response to something that can put the team and franchise in danger of not being able to achieve the ultimate goal of winning a championship? I don't ever have to think about that with Hal. The biggest thing that people say is Hal is cheap, which is debatable, you know, depending on what your criteria is. And the standard, again, using that word, for the Yankees is very obvious. And they tell you what the standard is, and they promote it. It's, you know, 27 world championships. There's a sign in the stadium to let you know. You know, it permeates throughout everything that the Yankees present to the public. The Knicks, is not the same thing. It should be if you're in New York. I mean, I think if you're a franchise in New York, and again, this still comes back to the Yankees because of their success, that should be the standard. It should be talked about. It should be pursued. There should be no other thing to really talk about for any New York team. And I'm not a fan of like the Jets or the Giants either, but it should be the same thing for them too. Same thing for the Nets. Like if you're in New York, the whole point, you want to win, you know? So there's such a clear difference in like ownership and intent and behavior and process that if I'm a Knicks fan, I'm always kind of like, not on edge, but I'm always having the back of my mind that, okay, I don't know how Dolan's going to factor into this, if he is going to factor into it, and will that impact what the team will look like moving forward? Because I do agree, unfortunately, that the Knicks are putting themselves in a good position to be legitimate title contenders. And Leon Rose has been like the best thing that's happened to that organization in years. But who knows? I mean, I can't say with 100% certainty that the owner will keep going along with it. I mean, he fired John Davidson with the Rangers out of nowhere, you know, and then put in Drury, and it's worked out for the Rangers. But like, it's kind of like that petulance or just like reactionary kind of behavior that is always lurking around the corner with the Knicks that could help or harm the franchise.
That's a great point to make, because, you know, if you're a Yankees fan but not a Knicks fan, and you don't really pay attention to the NBA, like, people want to complain about how Dolan is on like a whole nother level. He's on a different stratosphere when it comes to like wanting to complain about an owner. Like, he's been horrible for many years. But he, like you mentioned with Leon Rose, who's the president of basketball operations, basically, if you're not a Knicks fan, he's the equivalent of Brian Cashman to the Knicks. And Leon has done a great job of building the roster and putting, you know, the right people in place, you know, trusting Tom Thibodeau, who I think is a fantastic coach. But you just never know with Dolan. Like, you just don't know. Like, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise if he was like, yeah, I don't get along with Thibodeau anymore, so I'm just going to fire him, even though like he's the right coach for this team. You just don't know with him just because of how erratic he's been with decision-making in the past. And also he just hired Dolan hired Isaiah Thomas and Phil Jackson, who are two of the worst executives I've ever seen in my life. Just completely derailed the franchise. Yep. Like any team I watch, two of the worst by far, and it'll be hard to get close to how bad those two guys were in particular. But yep. You never know with Dolan. You just don't know. He is he has shown in the past that if he doesn't like something, he will change it at a moment's notice. Whereas with Hal, it seems like, you know, there's definitely some thought into the decisions that the team makes. You know, are the Yankees sometimes too slow to make moves that they probably should have made? Yeah. But you at least know if you're watching the Yankees that there's a lot of thought that goes into their decision-making process. Whereas with the Knicks, it's not always been that case. So I just hope that like things stay status quo and Dolan can remain mostly in the background, which he's done in these past few years, because Leon and Thibodeau have done such a good job, and it would be unfortunate if that was disrupted by Dolan. And obviously, you know, it's Dolan's team, so he can do what he wants, but, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen.
Well, as a Bulls fan, I hope it does happen, because that would be great. that would be fun to watch. Just leave the Rangers alone. The Rangers still have a chance to win a championship this year and win a cup. So leave the Rangers alone. You can mess around with the Knicks. You know, sincerely, a Bulls fan. So on that note, we'll take this break. We'll come back and we'll get into Yankee specific talk. We'll talk about the rotation and some other things going on with the seemingly very good New York Yankees. So we'll get to that right after this break. And we're back. So Views from 314 Feet Podcast. We won't be talking basketball anymore moving forward, for those of you that were here just for the baseball. But we thought that'd be a nice little curveball to throw everybody to start the show off. So focusing on the Yankees now, we're getting close to Memorial Day. The season's flying. It feels like the year's flying, because now we're already near Memorial Day, which is crazy. So that feels like a good measuring point, or like point in the schedule where we can start to figure out, you know, like what things start to settle around this time. I think, you know, you get into the plate appearances and the starts where there's a routine and things are starting to stabilize, I guess. But we thought it'd be interesting to have a conversation, because it's something that people have mentioned throughout the start of the season so far, in regards to the great start of the Yankees in 2024 versus the Yankees start in 2022. And if this is the same situation as 2022, or if this is different, does it feel different, or are there different contributing factors? So Chris, in your mind, and you started in 2022, right? Covering the Yankees?
Yeah, August 2022. So okay. Yeah, I'm the reason why I think that team fell apart.
Yeah, so everybody can blame Chris. But you were obviously very familiar with that season and the Yankees and how it was going, then how it went. And you were around the team then, you're around the team now. Do you think that this is the same as 2022, or do you think that this is different?
I mean, I think they're similar starts in that both the offense at the start of 2022 to where we are now, May 20th, 2022, and the pitching staff from the beginning of the season to May 20th, 2022, like they're very similar starts.
Do you mean 2024 or 2022?
No, I'm talking about the 2022 season. Like okay. if you're comparing the two, like they're very similar in that the offense was really good for the Yankees in 2022. The offense right now is really, really good. The pitching staff right now is very good. And then the pitching staff in 2022 up until this point is also very good. Like the bullpen was good. I was just looking at some stats. Like Clay Holmes's ERA was 0.44 on May 20th, 2022. And obviously it's zero right now. So like there are very similar, you know, statistics that say like it's basically the same start that they had in 22. The difference is obviously the health factor. You know, in I think it was June, like the injuries started to, you know, pile up for the Yankees. So we haven't really reached that point with the 2024 version. They've basically been healthy for the entire season. You know, Cole hasn't been available. DJ hasn't been available. And other than that, they've been running out like similar lineups basically every day, which we haven't seen much of with the Yankees. So, you know, if you're looking at it like pessimistically, I know some fans are, because that's just what some Yankees fans do. They're going to be like, well, this is 2022 all over again. And, you know, we're going to be eliminated in the wild card round. We're not even going to win the division. It's like, I don't know if that's going to happen, because a lot of this is like what we were talking about with the Knicks. A lot of this is health related. If the Yankees right. can stay healthy, they're going to be really good and they're going to be a World Series contender. But you just can't predict what's going to happen with health. You know, Stanton has stayed healthy. But I think the biggest difference with the 24 version compared to the 22 version is they didn't have Juan Soto, which really makes a right. difference, because in 22, it got to a point, obviously, where it was just the Aaron Judge show and, you know, the Yankees are going as Judge goes. If Judge didn't hit for a game, let's say Judge goes 0-for-4 one night, more often than not in 2022, like the Yankees were losing. Whereas with this version, it just seems like if Judge goes 0-for-4, there are players who can pick him up, you know, because they have Soto, who's one of the best, you know, five hitters in the sport. They didn't have that luxury in 22. Like Stanton to start the season in 22 was awesome. Like he was really good. But you also just knew, judging by Stanton's history, that he was going to get hurt at some point and they weren't going to have that hitter anymore. Whereas like, let's say Stanton gets hurt today, it's like, okay, like it's a big loss with how he's performing, but it's also, you know, I don't want to say fine, but there's just more help in the lineup. Whereas like they didn't really have that in 2022. They didn't have that level of hitter that can help Judge out. So that's a huge difference when you're talking about the 24 version and the 22 version of the Yankees. And then the starting rotation, like they had Jordan Montgomery and Jameson Taillon, two guys who we talked about just weren't going to be in the playoff rotation. With this team, like the way the guys are performing, like I can see all these guys having a realistic mm-hmm. chance of starting a playoff game. Whereas with like Taillon and Montgomery, it's like maybe Montgomery, Taillon, no. I don't think you'd want to start him in a playoff series in any game. But like with this version of the Yankees, it's like, would you trust Carlos Rodon to pitch in a playoff game right now? Yes. Like with the way he's performing. Would you trust Luis Gil? Yes, obviously. Would you trust Nestor? Yes. Clark Schmidt? Yeah. Yes. Marcus Stroman? You know, maybe if he figures out his command. But, you know, basically you would trust Stroman to start a playoff game. The 22 version didn't have the amount of starters that the Yankees currently have that you'd trust to start a playoff game. So there are definitely a lot of similarities and some differences, but ultimately it still comes down to health. If the Yankees are healthy, they are certainly a World Series contender.
I also think this 24 team is much more difficult to attack and game plan against. You know, the 22 team, at least offensively, they didn't have enough lefty hitters. You know, you could still find an area of weakness to exploit if you had the right personnel to attack them. And I feel like now with this Yankees team, there's so much more lineup balance, and the quality of the bats that they have on both the left and right side of the plate is so much better than what it was in 22 that you can't pick those lanes anymore to attack them with like hard throwing righties. You know, at some point you're going to face Juan Soto, or you're going to face Alex Verdugo, who doesn't strike out much, who can grind in a bat, who's going to make contact. You have Anthony Rizzo, who's starting to, you know, put his slow start behind him and can drive a pitch. You even have Oswaldo Cabrera that's had his moments where he's had good at bats against good pitchers, both lefty and righty, and has come through. It just feels like the diversity and quality of the lineup overall is much better than 22. And I think that the depth of the lineup is much better. You also have younger players. You also have in Austin Wells, who, you know, hitting from the left side, despite his numbers. And we've talked about this a lot, that he's still like hitting the ball hard and like having really good at bats. He just doesn't have the numbers to like the counting stats to back that up. In 22, like you said, a lot of it was like Judge driven. A lot of it was Glaber driven, outside of like that August where he thought he was getting traded and it kind of like impacted him. And he had that rough beginning to the second half of the season. They have a better shortstop. They also have better defense. I mean, like the Yankees are a better defensive team in 24 than they were in 22. They have like a good left fielder who's making a lot of nice plays in the gap towards the line, going back in Verdugo. Juan Soto has improved as an outfielder this year. Judge has been solid in center field. But the infield defense, I think, is largely better, especially at the shortstop position. I mean, that's like the obvious place to turn to.
No, because the Yankees were telling us at that point that Isaiah was one of the best defensive shortstops. So I don't know. Yeah, I think you might be wrong with that.
My bad. I'm sorry. Anthony Volpe is not as good as IKF. And I know I like tweeted the thing about IKF stabilizing the infield. I still believe that, just because the context of why he was brought in and what was preceding him. Like Gleyber Torres was like me playing shortstop at the major league level. So like, you know, I didn't agree with them getting IKF to begin with, but I understood what the logic was. And I think, to his credit, even though nobody's going to agree with this, as a stopgap, IKF did enough to like kind of bridge the gap for that 1 year, because that's ultimately what happened. He was a stopgap, and they threw Volpe in there as fast as they could, you know, whether he was going to sink or swim. You know, IKF was a stopgap. And it kind of worked out that way. And the team won however many games and went to the ALCS, which is something I also like wanted to point out. That 22 team gets dumped on a lot. And I know why. So I won't say I don't know why. I do understand why, but I think it's unfair. They won the division and they went to the ALCS. The problem is that they weren't as good as the Astros. The Astros are just built better roster-wise than the Yankees were that year, and they didn't get the breaks to win that series. They had shortcomings, and the Astros are, quite frankly, a better team than they were, and they won the World Series. But I don't think that that meant that automatically that 22 team was bad or like a fluke or something. They were a good team. Like, if the Astros aren't the Astros, they have a chance to go to the World Series. I mean, I think that 22 team is viewed unfairly. I mean, they were a good team, you know, like,
it's,
you know,
because they fell off. That's why they are viewed unfairly. It should be just because of the fact that, like, when you start 33-15, the expectations, well, they started way better than that. I forget what their record was. At one point they were like nearly 40 games over 500, I think. But when you start that way, people automatically assume that, you know, they're the 1998 Yankees, and then you have to win a World Series that year. It's just difficult to win a title. I know some fans don't want to hear it, because it's like, it's the messaging that, you know, the organization has been using in the past few years, that, like, you know, the playoffs are a crapshoot, you know, you just have to get in and you never know. I mean, like, there's some credence to that. Like, it's true. Like, sometimes the best teams who are entering the playoffs don't win the title. Like, if you would have told me last year that the Braves would have been bounced in the first round, I would have been like, what? Because, like, right. They were the best team. And then they get bounced by the Phillies. And then right. The Diamondbacks get to the World Series. And then the Rangers, like, win it all. Like, yeah, like, sometimes it doesn't bounce your way. And that's just the reality of the sport, especially when you're playing a 162-game season. And then you have to beat a team in three games or five games or seven games, you know, no matter in depending on what round, like, it's hard. Like, there's right. a lot of variance that could happen in a series that's that short when you're comparing it to 162 games.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I just feel like whenever people bring up 2022, it's just, and I agree with you. I just think it's largely unfair. They were a very good baseball team. I mean, that 22 team was good, and there really isn't any evidence to show that they weren't good outside of them losing to a better team in a short, you know, in a relatively short series. I mean, it happens. Like, people love to talk about the Orioles, but the last time I checked, the last time they were in the playoffs, they got swept. You know, like, they played three games or however many games it was, and then they went home. And they're given the benefit of the doubt this year when the last time we saw them in the playoffs, they got bumped right away. So, I don't know. I always feel weird when people talk about the 22 team. But I do think, coming back to this question, there is a much stronger chance of this 24 team being sustainable and playing at that higher level throughout the entire season, just because the roster is better. And I also think, and we, you know, we'll talk about the rotation in a second. We talked a little bit about the lineup and the diversity and depth that it has. I also think that this starting rotation is more reliable and is also more diverse than the 22 rotation. The 22 rotation felt like Gerrit Cole and everybody else. And with Gerrit Cole not being here, we can see just how good the rotation is, but they attack you from so many different ways. Like, you mentioned this in your article, and we could talk about it soon. Luis Gil is playing, I mean, he's pitching like Gerrit Cole last year. And Clark Schmidt can now attack righties and lefties. And Carlos Rodon has an expansive repertoire now where he can attack you in so many different ways. He's no longer predictable. Then you have somebody like Nestor, who's like crafty and has his deceptive fastball and relies on command. And then you have Stroman, who's kind of like a righty Nestor, in the sense that, like, he needs to, like, hit spots and, like, has to be crafty and, like, really pitch his way through a start. You know, you're not getting the same look and approach in every game, and guys are executing at a high level. So, you know, I don't really have any questions about this rotation like I did the 22 staff, where it's like, I don't know which Jordan Montgomery we're going to get today, and I don't know how Jameson Taillon is going to come out today. I don't have that question or concern with whoever pitches on any day for the Yankees right now. It's just, I know what I'm going to get, and if it doesn't happen, you're kind of surprised at this point, but you're like, okay, well, the next guy will get him tomorrow. You're not really excuse me, you're not in a situation where you're like, well, I don't know which version of this guy I'm going to get on any given night. When I feel like that was the case in 22. And obviously the Yankees felt that way because they shipped one of the starters out, you know, in the middle of the season. So I think the difference is the bullpen, but we've talked about the bullpen a lot. But I think the rotation is much more reliable through the first part of the season than the 22 version was.
Yes, I totally agree. I don't really have anything else to add. You know, I think this roster is certainly capable of winning a title. That's all there is to really say. I mean, if everybody is healthy or relatively healthy going into the playoffs, this team has enough talent to win it all. I don't know what else you can ask for about a team right now. You know, obviously it's early, so there's still a long way to go. But as of now, with how they're constructed, they have enough to win it all.
I agree. So we'll go to this break, our final break of this episode. We'll talk about the rotation and get to your mailbag questions. So we'll be right back after this break. And we're back. It's Randy. It's Chris. So, Chris, you wrote an article for The Athletic this morning, or it came out this morning as we're speaking, Monday, May 20th, on some of the things that have been really helping out the rotation and some of the contributing factors to the success so far. We obviously just talked about the rotation in our last segment, but can you tell us what you wrote about in your Athletic article in regards to the starting rotation?
Yeah. I mean, if you go back to spring training, there was a lot of skepticism surrounding just the state of the rotation, especially once Garrett got hurt. Because like once Garrett got hurt, a lot of the focus centered on, well, the Yankees have to sign Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery. Like they just have to do it because they don't have enough talent in the rotation. I mean, obviously it's turned out that they didn't need them, at least as of now, because of just how well the starters have been pitching. And it really starts with Luis Gil, who was, you know, at the time, you know, Gerrit Cole's replacement in the starting rotation. And if you're just looking at it on the surface at the time, obviously you're thinking, well, that's not a comparison because Gerrit Cole is just way better than Luis Gil. And it's just fascinating that Luis Gil's start through nine starts this season is basically the same as Gerrit Cole's start last year through his first nine starts. I'll read you the stats. So last year, Garrett pitched 56 and two-thirds innings through his first nine starts, Gil 49. Cole gave up 41 hits, Gil 26. Cole gave up 14 earned runs, Gil 13. They had the same number of strikeouts, 62. Cole's ERA was 2.22. Gil's is 2.39. And the batting average against Cole was 2.01. And Gil is an absurd 152. So they basically, as I wrote in the story, they replaced Gerrit Cole with Gerrit Cole, and which Luis Gil has been. Like he is, he's been a prime candidate. He is a prime candidate to win Rookie of the Year. He still has eligibility because he didn't pitch enough in 21. He is also, if he continues pitching like this, he should be an all-star, and if he continues past that, again, who knows what's going to happen with him in the rotation. But if he's, let's say he stays in the rotation, which I still think he's likely going to come out at some point, but you know, let's say he pitches 150 plus innings, like if he continues pitching like this, he's going to be a Cy Young candidate. He's been that good. So they've replaced Gerrit Cole with Gerrit Cole. And then also there was a ton of noise on Carlos Rodon coming into the season. You know, he had a 6.85 ERA. The last time we saw him in 23, he's turning his back on Matt Blake in Kansas City. He's giving up eight runs and getting no outs. And everybody is like, holy shit, this contract is a gigantic bust.
Yeah.
And this is year one of of a 6-year deal. And everybody's like, well, the Yankees just burned $162 million. And then this year, there were so many questions, and to his credit, like he's delivered. You know, his strikeout numbers aren't what they were in 22 and 21 when he was with the Giants and he was one of the best strikeout pitchers, but you know, he has found ways to get it done. He has diversified his arsenal. You know, prior to last year, he was basically a two-pitch pitcher, fastball, slider. You know, both fastball and slider usage-wise are down this year because he's added a changeup, cutter. You know, he uses his curveball somewhat. In Sunday's game against the White Sox, he used his changeup 18 times, the most he's ever thrown it in a game. And, you know, the White Sox had nine swings on that changeup, and they whiffed seven times. So it's become an effective pitch for him. And then, finally, I think it should be noted with Clark Schmidt, Schmidt comes into the year coming off of a career high workload. And, you wonder just how well a pitcher is going to do after a career high in innings pitch. I go back to Nestor last year. In 22, he had a career high in workload. 23, he's dealing with injuries the entire season and was mostly ineffective. Schmidt's coming off a career high in innings pitch last year, and he's been amazing. He's taken five steps forward. You mentioned his ability to get lefties and righties out. Last year, he struggled with getting lefties out. His cutter, which he uses against lefties, was a work in progress. That's turned into the pitch he uses the most this year. And again, that was a pitch that he really was trying to hone in basically the entire year. And actually this year, he's been better against left-handed hitters than right-handed hitters. So, just the entire rotation, even Nestor, I didn't write about Nestor in the article, but, he had a lot of question marks too coming into the season. A lot of people thought that 22 was probably a fluke. This guy wasn't anybody. He showed signs, obviously, with the Yankees, but not in a stretch like he did in 22. And Nestor has answered the questions so far too. So, a lot of the focus obviously was on the offense so far this year, just because of how poor they were last year. But a lot of credit should also be given to the Yankees starting rotation. Like, they've basically kept the Yankees in every single one of their 45 games. Like, you want to talk about Carlos's outing against the Orioles, where he gave up three homers. I think he gave up five runs that day. And outside of that, there just haven't been outings from the starting rotation where it's like, well, the Yankees just don't have a chance today because, Marcus Stroman gave up eight runs in three innings, and that's the game. Like, that right. It just hasn't happened. So a lot of the credit also belongs to the starting rotation, and they're doing this again without Gerrit Cole, which is amazing.
Right. And now they're starting to get deeper into games, which is also a good sign. So, I think part
of it
is
in the past seven games, I'll say this quickly. In the past seven games, they've won seven straight games. Each of their starting pitchers has gone at least six innings and given up two or fewer runs. If you do that, you're going to win games.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a welcome sight, especially the way that they started the season this year with not giving much starter length whenever these games are going on. So that's also really encouraging. And I think it's helped out the bullpen in a lot of ways too. All good things with the rotation. Go subscribe to The Athletic. Go read Chris's work. Be a good Yankee fan and subscribe to The Athletic. So with that, we'll jump into the mailbag. We have some really good questions this week, so we want to make sure that we hit all of them. The first one is from Simon Wah. Hey, podcast crew, love the show. Thank you very much. With Kane Lee set to come back soon, Marinaccio option down again, Efros potentially back later in the season, Tonkin as the last arm in the pen, what does the bullpen look like by the end of the year for a potential playoff run? Do you think the team goes out and gets a high leverage arm, stands pat with the arms in-house, or something else?
I mean, they probably should go out and get at least one or two arms. Obviously they have Efros coming back at some point. Trevino had a setback. I don't know when he will return, but if he does return, that's a quality arm to have. I thought he was really good for the Yankees in 22 after that ill-fated Frankie Montas deal. Like, I thought he was really good. It's so early to say, like, who's going to be in the bullpen or not. Like, basically, like, a few guys for sure are going to be in the bullpen. Klay Holmes, obviously he's established himself as the best closer in baseball. I don't think that's like a hot take.
No, I don't know.
Like if you have a 0.00 ERA and we're almost in June, like you are the best closer in my opinion. So like he's certainly going to be in the bullpen. I mean, Luke Weaver has developed into an amazing weapon out of the pen. Like he's been one of the best relievers in the sport too. So like he if he continues on this path, that's also a really good weapon to have for the Yankees. We talked about Luis Gil. He's probably going to end up in the bullpen at some point. I know it's going to be hard. I know fans aren't going to want to hear it, but the Yankees have said from the beginning that they are going to have to monitor his workload, not necessarily put an innings limit on him, but common sense says a guy coming off Tommy John is not going to throw 170 plus innings this year. It's very, very, very unlikely to happen. So you put him in the bullpen and you have three guys, if Weaver continues pitching the way he has, that can carry you from the sixth inning onward. Because you can put Heal in for, you know, an inning and a half or two innings or whatever it might be, turn it over to Weaver, who's been unbelievable, and then Holmes has been automatic this year outside of, you know, he gives you a few scares, but he gets the job done. So having three guys in the back of your bullpen who can, you know, lock it down for you is huge. So those three guys, Ian Hamilton's probably got a spot locked up. He hasn't been very good, but you know, I do know that the organization believes in him. Nick Birdie, who knows, his command hasn't been that great, but you know, I know that the Yankees do really, really like what they see. Outside of those guys, it's a toss-up. Caleb Ferguson, not a given. Victor Gonzalez, not a given. Because you can have Tommy Kahnle, who's basically the he throws righty, but you know his strength is getting out lefties because of his changeup. So you don't necessarily need a left-handed pitcher if Tommy is performing well. And if he's healthy, which is never the case.
Right.
But outside of those, but outside of Holmes, Weaver, and probably Heal, like those guys are the givens. And outside of that, I think it's up in the air.
Yeah. I mean, I'll continue to say they need to bring somebody in that can add to the swing and miss. I mean, I think the Yankees are always looking to add to the bullpen. They're always looking for arms, especially at the trade deadline. So, I expect them to do the same. I mean, they even did that last year, and they had waved the white flag at the trade deadline. They still brought in a reliever. So I think they'll bring somebody in. They'll bring in a high strikeout guy and add to the names that you mentioned. So I would expect some movement by the time the trade deadline comes.
I would be surprised if they don't add a reliever. I mean, that's just what they do. The Yankees just do that.
Right. Yeah, I would. And I think they need to do it. I mean, I think that's the one thing. I think that the bullpen has a ceiling, and if you can get more strikeout guys in there, then that ceiling like goes away. All right, next question from Ian Giannatino. I think I pronounced that correctly. Hey guys, with our rotation being as incredible as it has, do we see a world where we imply a 6-man rotation once Cole is healthy? Even if short-term, an extra day off coming back from an elbow injury would be nice for Cole to ease into things. I know Heal is the odd man out given the options remaining, but I don't see how you could justify sending him down with how locked down he's been. So we've talked about this. We talked about this on the last episode. I think this is a pretty quick answer, and they're not going to do a 6-man rotation. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to happen. They haven't said one way or the other, and I don't think they will until they're faced with that possibility. But, you know, when they've had this happen in the past where, you know, they can have the possibility of going to a 6-man, they haven't done that. So I assume that that's going to continue to be the case this year. And why, again, you have a clear candidate to be moved to the bullpen and Heal just because of what he went through in 21 and then rehabbing. Like, I think people also forget that Heal was optioned out of big league camp basically at the start of March because they were they did that because they were monitoring his recovery from Tommy John in rehab. They only went to Heal because they had a need, and he was obviously a great option with just how he was performing. But they've kind of already shown you what they're going to do with Heal. If we go back to March 3rd, which I think is the date when he was optioned, they optioned him because they were being very, very cautious with his workload. So at some point, they're probably going to end up doing the same thing with his workload. Instead of optioning to minor league camp, they will, I think, send him to the bullpen.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have anything to add. I would be shocked if they went to a six-man rotation. I know they did it like once or twice over maybe the last 10 years, but that didn't even last long. So I don't think that's happening. Okay, next question from Roger Estevez. With Verdugo going on a little slump, would the Yankees make a change in the lineup? If so, what would be the ideal new lineup? I don't think they're going to change the lineup.
I don't think so either.
I mean, at first I didn't love the idea of Verdugo being the cleanup hitter, but then when I thought about it, I thought it made perfect sense, and I actually think it works. You know, to have a high contact guy, a guy that can work at bats. He's not going to strike out much. To have him behind Soto and Judge is like actually a really smart move. And I think they should keep it that way just because he's having a little slump that coincided with the birth of his child. I don't think that means that they need to change the lineup around or start moving things. It's working. They're scoring a lot of runs. They're hitting a bunch of home runs. They're driving the ball. Like, I don't know why you would change something that's working right now just because a guy, you know, hasn't been on fire for the last like week or two. I think it makes sense. I think it's a really smart lineup adjustment that Boone made, and to his credit, it's worked. I mean, I think it's kind of unlocked the lineup a little bit. So I wouldn't change it just because he's struggling a little bit.
I totally agree. There's really no need to change it up. I don't have anything else to add. I mean, it's working. They're scoring runs. They're hitting home runs. I don't know. There's nothing to really complain about with the lineup. It's working fine.
Yeah. I mean, they're one of the best offenses in the league, which is what we thought they were going to be, but it's actually like happening now. So it's really no, in my opinion, and yours as well. It's just, there's no reason to shake it up. I mean, they're going well. So, all right. Last question from Arthur Blainville. Hi guys. Thanks for this high quality podcast. Thank you, Arthur. We appreciate it. It's been a long time since the Yankees have had such a competitive bench. Who in the minor league system do you see fighting for those bench spots? I hope you've already talked about Jose Trevino in this podcast, or that he will soon. Like you guys, he's incredible right now. P.S. We need Brian Cashman on this podcast before the end of the season. We'll work on it.
That would be nice.
We'll
work on
it. It would be nice. We've talked about him a lot in the last couple of weeks, so might as well have the man on. What do you think about the bench?
We talked about Jason Dominguez. I think he's really the only candidate to, you know, be in the mix for a bench spot or, you know, a starter spot. But as we've talked about so many times, like I don't see that happening at this point. Oswald Peraza was reinstated from his rehab late last night, and then the team optioned him to AAA. I don't see and it's kind of crazy to say because we all expected Peraza was going to end up being the starting shortstop last year. I don't know what his role is moving forward. I don't know what they see for him in the future. The way they've handled Peraza would suggest that their words, that they believe in Peraza, we think he's going to be a big part of the future. Like, their words just like don't match up the actions with Peraza. I've always found that interesting with him. So I don't know what his future holds in the organization. You look at Glaber, there's probably going to be a spot open at second base next year, but Peraza in his limited time just hasn't shown that he has the consistent ability to hit, which is a big deal. If like you can't hit, you're probably just not going to have a spot. So I don't know what the future holds for him. Dominguez, as we said, it's possible that we see him at some point. I don't think it's going to be soon, especially with how well the team is performing. There's really no need to have Dominguez up here. I know some fans probably won't like that answer, but it's just the reality. They're 33-15. They did this without Dominguez. Their outfield is fine. It's performing. Everyone is getting along. The clubhouse is fine. Like, they don't need an injection of energy like they were needing in last season when they called up the guys when the season was over. And then even in 2022, they needed that injection of energy and they brought up Oswaldo Cabrera. Like, they don't need that right now with anybody in the minor league. So I don't think anyone currently is in the mix to be a bench candidate.
Yeah, I mean, they have guys on a major league roster right now that are versatile and contributing when they play. I mean, even Jamai Jones hit a home run and had a really good game in Tampa. You know, I think having a guy like Jones is good because he can accept the role that he's going to play once every blue moon and be fine with it and, like, still have, like, a good attitude, still work hard and still put himself in a position to be ready to play when called upon. You're not going to put Oswald Peraza in that situation. That's counterproductive. As well as all the reasons that you gave in terms of the words that they give us publicly and their actions. So it doesn't make sense to have Peraza play the Jones role. Birdie and Cabrera combined have like really contributed well. So they have that versatility and optionality. They have Trevino and Wells just going back and forth, and they're both like doing well offensively and defensively. Grisham doesn't play that much. I mean, I mentioned it before. He has like 40 plate appearances, you know, and when he plays, at the very least, you're going to get really good defense in the outfield. You might not get much offensively, but he wasn't a great hitter to begin with, and also he just hasn't gotten that many at-bats. So I think because of the versatility of guys and the interchangeability of guys, it's been fine. Also, LeMahieu's on his way, so that probably means Jones isn't going to be on the team for much longer as long as LeMahieu can stay healthy. So that's another piece that adds the versatility. It obviously deepens the bench. I mean, I think the guy that we're talking about is LeMahieu. You know, he's the only one that's not there that you would expect to be there. And then it just makes their bench much better because now you can move Oswaldo around more. You can use Birdie. You can finally give Rizzo some rest with LeMahieu. I mean, Rizzo's been playing a lot, which is good that he's holding up. But obviously, he's an older player. He has the back issue that could pop up in any moment. It'd be great to start giving him some rest as the season goes on. So I think the person we're really talking about is the guy that we haven't seen this year, which is who is DJ LeMahieu. I don't really see anybody else coming up anytime soon unless there's an injury or something crazy happens that we can't predict right now. So I don't think that they need anybody. They're like you said, they're 33-15. It's working. They're playing well. You know, everybody's contributing. I can't think of one person that hasn't contributed in one form or fashion. You know, even with Grisham, he's playing good defense. So I think it's fine. I think the bench is fine.
Yeah. And I was going to mention DJ. Like, DJ's probably going to come back at some point very, very soon. And then when that happens, he's likely taking over for Jamai Jones's spot. And then, like, on the roster. And then I assume that the Yankees would have him be their starting third baseman. And if that happens, then you have John Birdie and Oswaldo Cabrera on the bench. Two very, very good bench options to have.
Yep.
Like that's a really good two guys to have on the bench. And then you also add in Austin Wells or Jose Trevino. That's three really solid options on the bench to have. So the Yankees roster is, like, if you're looking at the depth, just starting off last season, the depth was obviously a concern. Like, anybody who was watching the team closely thought that, oh man, like, the Yankees just don't have enough depth. Like, if guys go down, they're going to be in trouble. Whereas this year, even Trent Grisham, like, that's four guys who on the bench at when DJ comes back, who you can put them into the lineup and at least have some comfort that they know what they're doing.
Right.
Whereas last year, that just wasn't the case.
Right.
So that's a huge difference in terms of just comfort. If someone goes down, that there are quality options this year for when, because it's going to happen. I don't think they're going to, you know, be this healthy. So like when that happens, like, they do have at least quality options. And then even, like, again, if you want to look past the four guys who would be on the bench and Birdie, Cabrera, Grisham, and then the backup catcher, you know, you still have Dominguez, you know, you still have Peraza. So like there are, you know, Pereira. So you do have options to have if things go sideways fast.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you everyone for your mailbag questions. We appreciate it. All very good questions. And led to good discussion. So we're going to wrap up this episode of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. We appreciate everybody listening. Chris, any final words? Do you have a final words for the Knicks as our season comes to an end?
Sad ending. I mean, very, very fun season to watch. It might be the most fun I've had watching a Knicks season just all together. Again, there haven't been many high moments in my lifetime, at least. But this was a fun season. I'm going to miss it. And hopefully we'll be back next year.
Well, I'll keep my thoughts to myself on that last part.
I think they have a really good opportunity ahead of them. They just have to capitalize. Like, the window to win is now with this team. So I hope they make good decisions this offseason.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. If they make the right decisions, I think they're a title contender. I mean, I think that's pretty clear at this point. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll monitor it as the summer goes on. Hopefully the Yankees keep winning as well. Thank you to everybody for listening to the podcast. You can find us on your favorite podcast platforms. You can also find us on YouTube with the same title as the podcast. Please leave us a 5-star review. Subscribe on your podcast platform. Subscribe over at YouTube. We greatly appreciate it. And we'll decide if we'll have a second episode this week. We'll let everybody know via Twitter. But if not,
probably not, because I'm going to San Diego on Thursday. Oh, okay. Morning.
All right. So, their answer is that question. So with that in mind, our next episode will drop next Tuesday, and we will speak to you all next week.